Hey, what's up? It's The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk with you today. No Lante today or tomorrow. He'll be back on Monday. So you're dealing with us the next 2 days. Let's talk some hoops today, as we will every day. We'll also talk some racing. We're going to have Steve Francis on, World of Outlaws, Farmer City Raceway coming up tomorrow and Saturday. He'll join us here later this hour, 3:30, 3:35, in that area. We'll talk some racing, get you filled in on what you need to know about the World of Outlaws and what that action looks like. I was just, right before the show, Googling and getting a little... See, Lon's far more of a racing expert, to be honest, looking at some of the action here. And that looks like a heck of a time over there, watching just what they're working with on the dirt. And I'm excited to learn when I'm asking Steve what this is like. And he's a Hall of Famer in his own right on the dirt track. So we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But hoops is heavy here in the off season. There is no off season, Kyle. We've talked about Illinois' options as far as transfers, and things are going to really heat up this weekend. Like we mentioned yesterday, Kylan Boswell, the Champaign native, Arizona guard coming in starting tomorrow for an official visit. Kerry Booth from Notre Dame, son of Calvin Booth, will be here this weekend, I believe, starting tomorrow as well. 6'10", stretch four, that is only 18 years old, played his freshman year at Notre Dame, can shoot it from the outside. Really exciting upside for him. And I want to get to, kind of on that note, as we go along, we mentioned at the very end of the show yesterday the idea of, is Brad doing something here beyond just a one-season roster build? It's hard to do that in the portal era because there is some, especially now that you had the lawsuit with the NCAA, and the current environment is you can transfer as many times as you want. There's no restrictions there. So there are no guarantees that someone you bring in will be there the following year. But I think it's interesting who Illinois has brought in already. Jake Davis, Trey White, guys that could play multiple years. Kylan's somebody that could play multiple years. Same thing with Booth. Technically, even A.J. Storr, only a sophomore, finishing up there at Wisconsin, and then 2 years of eligibility remaining. So we'll get to that as we go along. But I wanted to start with Kentucky because that is the biggest story right now in college basketball.
Brad Underwood to Kentucky is what you're telling me?
You said it. I didn't say it. No. I'm not going there. I do want to have a conversation of where he's at on the list because it's something that Illini fans are wondering. And look, we're not there in Lexington, boots on the ground. And usually coaching searches, it's very hard to know where an AD wants to go. Although when you bring a coach in for a very public visit, like Scott Drew was on yesterday with his family, and they landed the airport.
We had the flight tracker out. We had pictures
at
a restaurant
come
out. I mean, come on.
So then you're not hiding anything. And it made all the sense in the world for Kentucky, who got essentially turned down, and more reporting's come out on it. It's just all for nothing now, the Dan Hurley talk. Like, he said it after they won the national title that he didn't really have any interest, and reporting's come out that for sure that's a 0% chance of happening. Nate Oates put out a statement that he was staying at Alabama. Scott Drew has won a national title, has done great things at Baylor. Maybe he looked and said, you know, I've done enough at Baylor with their program and given them a title that I could, with a clear conscience, walk away and say I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and now I'm going to take on a new challenge. But ultimately, it was reported today that Scott Drew, after visiting Lexington yesterday, has decided that he's going to stay.
I was shocked. I thought that was kind of done. But it sounds like family played a big part in that one. Like this guy's been at Baylor for 22 years. His mm-hmm. kids have grown up there. And he's somebody who's probably going to be a guy with a statue outside of Baylor's stadium someday for bringing a national title. Because when he took over, Baylor was awful. Yep. I mean, what he did to rebuild this Baylor program, I know you look past the national title year and maybe they haven't made a bunch of deep tournament runs, but just to continuously be in the mix, and of course, one national title is really it. Once you win one of those, you can basically do no wrong at a place. So I kind of respect the move. I mean, he could have made a lot more money going to Kentucky. He could have obviously taken a job with a lot more prestige, but this is a guy who is a Baylor lifer type and one who just wants to ride it out at the place that he built from the ground up 22 years ago. And I don't know, I was shocked. I thought, you know, you get a call from Kentucky and especially when you see the size of that check that's being thrown around, you're probably going to take off and leave. But good for him. Good for him. He clearly likes it at Baylor, is happy there, doesn't want to mess with that. But where does Kentucky go now? You've swung and missed at your top two guys at this point because Dan Hurley's not going there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they've technically swung for Nate Oates, but he basically got out in front of it and said, I'm not leaving Alabama, which he's the one that, like, I don't totally understand it from his part. If I'm Nate Oates, I'm reconsidering that, you know, statement that I released because, man, I think he would be phenomenal at Kentucky. And, I mean, he's a guy that, yeah, he's done some good things with Alabama, but he's only been there for, what, 5 years? He's younger. I think he's only, like, 49. He could be the coach of Kentucky for the next 20 years. I think he'd be fantastic there, especially with the offense he runs. He's as modern of a head coach in terms of just analytics and the way he runs his offense. Like, that would be – if I'm Kentucky, I go back to him and say, what if we add an extra $5 million to that offer? Will you maybe take that statement down that you released last week?
It's a good question. I'm with you. I felt like he's, of course, at a football school. Not that they don't have NIL, because Alabama, usually when you have that passionate and rabid of a fan base, and then you bring in a lot of revenue with what your football team has been able to do.
I think a Final Four this year probably increased that NIL pool as well.
Which that's got to be such a huge factor for coaches right now, where maybe it's easier to stay at a place if your NIL is close to as good as it would be at Kentucky. Now, I've said it before. I've heard that Kentucky's maybe in that $7 million range. I know that Cal going to Arkansas, the reporting was that it'd be at least $5 million for him there. So if Bama's in the $5 million range or six or can get up to seven, I don't know that, then maybe he feels less inclined to want to jump there. But there is a different level of appeal to Kentucky just with the prestige. I mean, they're the all-time winningest program in college basketball history as far as wins go. I know in titles, UCLA leads everybody with 11. John Wooden, a big one to thank for that. But Kentucky second with 8, Carolina 6, UConn 6, Duke 5, Indiana 5, on down the list. But, yeah, I feel like that would be a job also to where you can get a really big pay raise. I wonder where – I have it pulled up here because I wanted to take a look at where Brad Underwood is. USA Today has their list for what coaches made this past season. Nate Oates was 10th in college basketball at $4.5 million.
And that probably took a massive hike after this
season. You would think.
And with his attachment to the – Calipari made so many coaches a lot of money this offseason.
True.
All these guys that have even, like – been rumored as a potential call for Kentucky to make are probably getting a bump in their salary to make sure that doesn't happen.
That's a great call. Now, and there were probably, just based on the jobs that have come open, with Michigan coming open, with Ohio State being open for a little bit, I'm imagining someone like a Lamont Paris. I don't know if he got a contract extension. Did he end up getting one at South Carolina? There were probably others.
I think he did.
That have benefited from just the jobs that have popped of late. But yeah,
I know, like, Greg McDermott got a big extension when he was linked to Ohio State.
That's true. So the Kentucky one is a big time job with you're talking big names, and there could be and expected to be a potential domino effect whoever takes this job. And Bill from Troy mentioned that on the U of I Atlanta League text line, and I know Kyle, you were talking about that before the show.
Yep.
That while some have speculated, you know, how many swing and misses would Kentucky have to then get to Brad Underwood? And again, I'm not knocking Brad. There are just guys that would naturally be higher than him on the list, those that have won a national title or at least gotten to a Final Four. And Brad coming off an Elite Eight, sure, and a lot of consistency here at Illinois. And the ability to go in the portal and rebuild rosters and reload and recruit high-profile guys, like, that's all stuff that he has on his resume. But Bill says, and I agree with this, I was concerned Brad would be high on the list for Baylor if Drew left. And that's something that you'd have to wonder about. Whoever Kentucky gets, what is that job, not just for Brad, but for other places as well, who then jumps to go get that job? Because if you remember, the Bill Self move to Kansas, of course, was triggered by the Roy Williams move to North Carolina. And that's kind of, then this job opens and this next fish gets reeled in by that program. So I don't know that Brad would leave for Baylor. Scott Drew made $5 million this past year. Brad Underwood at 4.7. Baylor's a really good program. I'm not saying I think that Brad could do. Could Brad do what Scott Drew has accomplished at Baylor here at Illinois? I think so. I don't have any reason to believe that he can't. But Kyle, what do you make of that? Just we don't have to worry about that now because Scott Drew is staying at Baylor. But just kind of rehash some of what you were discussing before the show.
Yeah, I think I'm not at all concerned about Brad Underwood going to Kentucky. I think he'd be so far down the list. Like you said, that's not saying Brad's a bad coach. I just think Kentucky's going to swing so big that Brad Underwood's probably like the 10th or 11th call that they would even make, if that. I would be far more concerned about whoever takes the Kentucky job. Now, that job being open would be far more likely to have Brad at the top of their candidate list. Now, at the same time, that job would probably be more of a lateral move for Brad. So would he consider that as much? Like, if Kentucky called Brad Underwood, he would have to be all ears on that. Kentucky's calling you. Like,
yeah.
And you probably would take it. Like, that's what Kentucky is. But
also, if taking the call gets you a raise, probably, right, at the very least, right, if you stay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he'll take a call from anywhere, probably, yeah, right, to use it as leverage, that, of course. But I'm just saying, like, Kentucky is
you're
Kentucky.
Right. You're right.
Whereas Baylor or, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know who
USC
the other.
Was USC, open. I know that some people out there said that Brad took a call from USC. I never heard that. I don't know.
And that would probably, I don't know, but would you really want to leave this situation at Illinois for that type of job? It's not the blue blood level. So there's a give and take there where I think it's more likely that whoever takes a Kentucky job, that job would have Brad higher on their list. Now, Brad would probably have that job lower on his consideration list for moving from Illinois. So, ultimately, I don't think it's really an issue. I think this whole thing will pass, and I don't really think Brad Underwood's in danger of leaving Champaign. But that, I agree. Like, if Baylor did come open, if Scott Drew had taken the job, I mean, Brad Underwood started his D1 head coaching career in Texas with Stephen F. Austin. He's familiar with the area. Like, that would be one where, yeah, I would expect, hey, Baylor would probably have him somewhat high on the call list there to try to make an offer for. So I think I'd be more concerned if I'm an Illinois fan about the residual effect of who takes the Kentucky job than the Kentucky job itself for Brad.
Yeah, and I admittedly, this came across my radar just as a thought. I don't think he would make this move, but if Scott Drew had taken Kentucky, I wondered, would Jerome Tang go back to Baylor where he's assistant for Scott Drew? And then we had the whole conversation, will Brad leave to go back to his alma mater at Kansas State?
That's the one you circle, right? Like, I think Jerome Tang is probably going to end up leaving there sometime in the next year or two. Like, he was linked to Arkansas before Calipari happened. When that one opens, if Jerome Tang ever leaves Kansas State, that's the one you circle, like, okay, alma mater, that's one where, I don't know. It's still like, you're not leaving for a better job.
No.
But it's just, it's the
emotional tie to it, potentially. I just don't see that, especially as of right now. Maybe if you reach a point, let's say they got bounced early again this year, and things have gone a little stagnant at Illinois, and the grumblings grow a little louder. Like, again, there was no any real scenario where Brad was going to be on a hot seat. Even if they lost in the first game to Morehead State, he was not on the hot seat going into the next year. But you're talking about a different world where if something like that were to happen, just the way that he's thought about, the way the fan base is, the way, I mean, let's be honest, production and the fan temperature on you is going to directly affect their involvement in NIL. Does some NIL dollars dry up if you're dissatisfied with the head coach? You don't feel like he's the right guy, or you have questions, you've been rubbed the wrong way, you're out one foot out the door on him, you take him to the Elite Eight, then you're safe here for a while. It silences the doubters for a while. It ups the NIL contributions, which it sounds like that has definitely happened. I've been talking to some people here recently, and while I floated, you know, was it $2 million? Is it $2.5 million for Illinois and the NIL pool? I've heard it's more than that now, at least based on what's been rumored here in the weeks that have come by since the Elite Eight. So that's all where Brad is kind of golden here for a little while. A job like Kentucky, even if you're golden, is worth listening to. And if he made the move, if he was the guy that they wanted and he made the move, I wouldn't blame him for a second.
No.
But a job like K-State, I just don't see that in the immediate future. Like if we're 5 years down the road and either Brad's accomplished what he's wanted at Illinois or things have gone a little stale at Illinois and stagnant, maybe then he would jump there. But right now I would see no reason why that would happen. As for who Kentucky will go after next, where would, if you were the Kentucky AD, and we assume that their firm knows, which seems like from Hurley, from Oates, from Scott Drew, who would be next for you?
Man, that's tough. I honestly do think, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, because it's a interesting discussion to have, but I would make Billy Donovan a really big offer and one that he would have to say no to. I still think, like, I know he hasn't been in college since 2015, and it looks so much different than when he left. And who knows if he even wants to. Maybe he truly means it. I found it interesting when the Bulls media kind of talked to him about it a couple days ago, he didn't really say, like, oh, no, I would never do that. He was more so, he said, like, oh, Kentucky, I'm familiar with that place. He was an assistant there under Rick Pitino for a while. He spoke highly of the Kentucky job and then kind of gave the coach speak answer of like, yeah, I'm focused on the play-in tournament for the Bulls and everything. I don't know. It kind of made me think like, I think he would consider it. I think he would consider it. And I just think like, yeah, the game's changed a little bit. It's been a while. He'd have to readjust to the new era of college basketball. But at the end of the day, he's proven he's a really, really good basketball coach. You're working with that $7 million NIL pool. So, yeah, there's NIL now. There's the portal now. But here's all these resources. Just go recruit guys. Just go get talent. I have no concern that Billy Donovan would be able to attract talent to Kentucky and win with them. So I would go for Billy Donovan. I'd make him an offer. If I'm Billy Donovan, I'm very frustrated being the head coach of the Chicago Bulls right now. As a fan, I'm frustrated with the organization. So if I'm him, I would be very frustrated being the coach there. The question would be, does he want to go back to college? But, man, if I'm Kentucky, I'd make him a can't refuse offer. I think he would be fantastic. I think he'd have no problem transitioning back into college.
Yeah, I think he'd kill it there if he decided to make that move. The question, I think, there's two questions that I ask myself. Number one, does he want to go back to college, or is there just so much more?
That's the question.
Of a circus around. You're not only the head coach or the GM, and you got to be sitting courtside and watching AAU during the summers, where obviously that's not going on at the NBA level. There's just so much more demands on a college basketball coach now versus when he was in the game in 2015 and when he was winning back-to-back titles in the mid-2000s. So that's one thing that I wonder about. Number two, though, on the flip side, how much certainty does he have that he's going to stick in the NBA is one thing that I wonder about. Like, he's been a good coach. He's above 500 coach. I think if his Wikipedia is updated, he's 360 and 276. So he's about 56-57% win percentage there in the NBA. He's not really probably the guy to blame. I wouldn't say probably. He's not the guy to blame in Chicago.
Not at all.
I wonder what the front office thinks about as they're trying to figure out their lane.
I think there would be no question that if he turned Kentucky down, he'd be coaching the Bulls next year. Like, I don't think he's getting fired. Now, if it depends on what direction the organization goes into. I think he would get an NBA head coaching job immediately if he got fired or whatever it was.
Because coaches in the NBA do recycle like crazy, don't they? Yes. They bounce around.
I mean, if Doc Rivers keeps getting chances mid-season, I don't know. I think
Mike Brown, right, has gotten a bunch of jobs. It does seem like just guys bounce from job to job to job, and I think he's probably well-respected enough that he's at least an average, if not maybe above average, NBA coach. Although he hasn't been to, I was looking at his playoff results, not since his first year in OKC, 2015-16, he's been out of the first round in the playoffs. Of course, situation matters and all of that. They ultimately, in Oklahoma City, got rid of Westbrook. And did he coach Westbrook and Durant?
I believe he did at their last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was before the last year before Durant left was his first year in OKC, I think.
That's right.
And the other thing with him, too, is just I know the rumors have been that he doesn't really want to go back to college. If he ever was going to go back to college, this is the opportunity. If Kentucky calls you with a massive offer and it's Kentucky and you have ties there, you work there as an assistant and it's Kentucky. Mm-hmm. If you ever wanted to get back into college, this is the best situation that you would possibly be offered, I think. Like, it's now or never. It's either if Kentucky calls Billy Donovan after the play-in game, assuming the Bulls don't do anything. Like, if he turns that down, he's probably an NBA coach till he retires. Because I just, like, if you're not going back for Kentucky,
right?
Are you ever going back for anything? I mean, unless a couple of these other blue blood jobs open at some point, I don't know. But, man, like, this is, it's kind of a situation where if you're him, you got to sit down and think, okay, I know I've been hesitant to go back into college. It's not the most fun coach in this Bulls organization right now, I would imagine, for him. Maybe he just likes the NBA, whatever it is, but he would have to sit down and be like, all right, this is it. If I want to go back to college, I cannot pass this opportunity up right now. And if I still don't, then I got to realize that I'm not getting a chance to coach Kentucky with this type of contract offer again.
No, I agree with all of that 100%. And no offense to the programs I'm about to mention, but it's different than when Illinois opened, obviously,
right.
Obviously pre-Brad Underwood resurgence of the program, like obviously that there would be a big challenge or a lot of question marks of what that looked like if Donovan were to try to take that or when Indiana opens. I know that there's this joke of whenever that job opens, they think they're getting Brad Stevens or somebody, you know, for the moon. I think every fan base has the pie in the sky, the best case scenario candidates, and usually those don't happen and have a lot of realistic chances of happening. But Kentucky, because of the prestige, because of just the resources, all the money there, the admittedly like the exposure that Cal always got, like ESPN was always like doing their pro days on ESPN, ESPNU, yep. And their Midnight Madnesses on their networks, like how much of a huge built-in advantage that is versus some other programs now. And then of course the NIL bag too. So I think you're completely spot on with that as far as the opportunity goes. Sean Miller's another one that I think I would probably pivot to if I'm looking in college. He's been to a number of Elite Eights. Went to a Sweet 16 in his first year at Xavier. I think that he's a guy that now, you know, he hasn't gotten to the Final Four. That's a notable knock on his resume, but knows how to recruit elite talent. And all of that. So I would look to him. I know Bruce Pearl's been thrown out there. We've got people on the text line saying that Mark Few should be the next call.
I think he would be in the same boat as Scott Drew and just stick where he's at. I mean, he's a legend at Gonzaga.
Yeah.
He's got it made
at Gonzaga. Yeah. I don't think he
and
wants.
And they actually have great NIL from everything I've seen, too, there at Gonzaga, too. And they've done well in the portal. And I think he would probably turn it down.
I don't think Few wants to recruit like the coach of Kentucky is supposed to recruit, if that makes sense.
No, that's a good point.
Like, just what's been said about Few is maybe a little, not that he doesn't grind and doesn't have to go out and sell his program, but, and look, Kentucky sells itself in a lot of senses, but, and maybe this has changed some with less emphasis on the high school recruiting, although Kentucky has still been huge of signing just monster high school classes with a bunch of five stars. I just know what Cal was like and what the expectation was to go out on the AAU scene and be at all these games and do all these in-homes. And it sounds like Few, you know, there might be an AAU tournament and Few wants to go fishing. Like that's been legit, has been talked about as something that's happened before. Yeah. So I'm not saying if, you know, Kentucky says here's $12 million a year, highest paid coach in basketball. What do you think about that? But
well, and the one other consideration for these coaches that are in such a stable situation too is that if you go to Kentucky, you better start winning right away with
100%.
What this fan base ran Calipari off for. I mean, I know he left on his own, but there was already like if Calipari didn't win a tournament game next year, he was gone.
Yes.
Like that was the situation. So if you're Mark Few, if you're Scott Drew, or if you're some of these coaches that have built up such a legacy at one place where you could have a disaster of a season and no one would really care because you've built up such a reputation there and you have such a good thing going, that if you leave for Kentucky and all of a sudden, I mean, you're going there now this offseason, now you have all this money to work with so you can bring in a lot of talent, But like, if the pieces don't fit right this first year and this first year doesn't go well, all of a sudden, like, the pressure's on you in year two. Or if you have good teams in the first couple years of Kentucky, you lose early in the tournament like Calipari was doing, oh boy, your job's not safe anymore. So like, that's the other thing, is these coaches have to weigh, like, I have the most secure job in the world here, especially in a place like Mark Few. Like, he can stay there till he retires, and they'll just continue pumping out great teams. And if he goes to Kentucky, like you said, he's going to have to recruit harder. And also, if he doesn't win right away, all of a sudden people aren't going to like him. He doesn't have that following. He doesn't have that security. So that's the other part about Kentucky that I think it'd probably have to be somebody who's not quite as secure in their spot right now that is willing to take on that risk as well.
That's fair. A lot of pressure there in Lexington for sure. We got to catch a break. I do want to get a couple of these texts in. I know that Wade brought up Rick Pitino possibly going back there. I think that's interesting and should be something he'd consider if they get to that as far as their wish list and they call. I would imagine that he would very much be considering and legit thinking about going back there just based on a place that he's had great, great success. And
that'd be the craziest result of the whole situation, though.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I wonder what Louisville fans would think about that, seeing him back on the other side of that rivalry. Bruce Pearl's been a name that's been brought up, a guy that's been to a Final Four, obviously super popular around here for obvious reasons. Speaking of super popular, I love that You Can Call Me Sal throws in, Juwan Howard works for me as the next Kentucky coach. That would be funny. Yeah. No chance, obviously. But all right, we're due for a break. We can talk more hoops as we go along. But coming up next, we're going to talk about the Illini 100 Farmer City Raceway, the World of Outlaws coming to town. We'll talk to Steve Francis all about that to get you up to date and in tune with what's going on this weekend, tomorrow, and Saturday for the Illini 100 on the dirt track. He'll fill us in on what's going on there, what you need to know. I see the phone line blinging right now, so we got to catch a break. We'll be back. This is The Drive.
Here's another home improvement insight from Kramer Siding and Window, a proud member of Prairie Home Alliance. A new front door can instantly upgrade the look of your home and make it more energy efficient. The Kramer Siding and Window team can also install French doors to your deck or patio, welcoming the outside in, or storm doors for an extra layer of protection against the elements. The estimate is free, financing is available, and the business is local. Schedule your beautiful new door today and save 25%. Call us, click on kramersiding.com, or visit the showroom in Champaign.
An April tradition continues as the most powerful late models on the planet make a stop in Illinois. The World of Outlaws Case Construction Equipment late models are back at Farmer City Raceway for the Illini 100. Don't miss the World of Outlaws Superstars and the Extreme Outlaw Midgets on one big stage. Friday and Saturday, April 12th and 13th. Visit worldofoutlaws.com for the details.
This is XYZ Insurance. How can I help?
I have a question about my home policy.
Okay, question about phone policy.
Home policy.
Okay, gnome policy.
H-O-M-E, home.
Technology is great, but sometimes it's better to talk with a real person. With Erie Insurance, you have a caring, independent agent who's with you from beginning to end.
We don't have any H-O-M-E's on record.
Your Erie agent in Champaign is Thomas and Eller's Insurance. Go to ErieInsurance.com for company licensure and product details.
Pia's is open. Catch all of your favorite MLB games on their big screens. Root on your favorite team wearing your Cubby Blue or your Cardinal Red. 1609 West Springfield in Champaign. Pia's offers not only a huge outdoor seating area, but indoor seating as well. Enjoy daily specials. It's the home of the Slugger Burger with buckets of beer and wings. Experience food, drinks, and fun at one of Champaign's best sports bars near Springfield and Madison, Champaign. Open 7 days a week. It's Pia's.
When you're buying a battery, it's important to look beyond just the price and make sure you're buying a quality battery. So when you're buying one from the big box store, make sure you ask the question, what's the date on this battery? Is it dependable? Sometimes the big box stores have batteries that have been sitting on the shelf for years. Or you can just come to Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable, and buy your battery from the people who only do batteries. Interstate Batteries at 2504 North Madison, Champaign, way out there, but totally worth the drive. How much is dependable worth to you? Interstate Batteries, open 6 days a week.
Free Tomato Plants. For over four decades, we've been welcoming spring with free tomato plants from First Federal Savings Bank of Champaign-Urbana. Everyone is welcome to two free tomato plants at the return of this great First Federal and community tradition for the 42nd year. To get your two free super fantastic variety tomato plants Monday, May 6th, just come into our lobby at either First Federal location, 1311 South Neal Street, Champaign, or 301 West Springfield Avenue, Urbana. While supplies last, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., we look forward to seeing you on May 6th. Member FDIC and equal housing lender.
Illini football star Isaiah Williams on why he lives at Pacifica on Green in Champaign.
Everything is literally luxury. The price that you get in this stuff for is crazy. Like one of the nicest apartments complex I've seen, from the moment you walk into the building to the elevators to when you get in the room. Everything is just luxury, top notch, and you're getting it for a good price.
To learn more about it or book a tour, go to PacificaOnGreen.com. You've heard about the doggy bag, right? From Bulldog Disposal Muhammad, a 6-cubic yard canvas bag that can be used for easy cleanup instead of a big dumpster. The one-time use bag is now available and you can save the delivery charge. Get the doggy bag at Do It Best Hardware in Champaign at 107 West Springfield. So fill up the bag, call Bulldog Disposal, have it disposed of, and you'll be organized. Go to bulldoggybag.com for all the details. That's bulldoggybag.com.
The average American throws away almost 5 pounds of trash per day, half which ends up in a landfill. At 2 Men and a Junk Truck, when we pick up your unwanted furniture, appliances, trash, and office equipment, we make it a priority to divert those items from your local landfill. 2 Men and a Junk Truck, looking for partners that share our vision of environmental responsibility. If you and your organization can reuse, upcycle, recycle some of these items, we would love to work with you. Contact us at 2menandajunktruck.com. We want to make room for what matters most.
Back in the drive with Tane Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's go to the Tapman's Towing phone line. Get up to speed on what's going down at the Farmer City Raceway Illini 100 this weekend. That's tomorrow and Saturday, April 12th and 13th. The World of Outlaws are in town, and it should be great action on the dirt track. Tell us all about it. Steve Francis, late model series director for World of Outlaws, joining us now on the Tapman's Towing phone line. Steve, how you doing today? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. Sitting here at the racetrack right now.
Awesome. Awesome. We appreciate you taking the time. So get us up to speed on what's going to be going down this weekend and what fans can expect when they come out and check it out. I've heard great things about the World of Outlaws, checking out the website earlier today. It just looks like a blast of a time and a lot of action.
Well, we're expecting 40-some super late models. We all have the extreme midgets here. And then we also have the Mars Modified, you know, the regional modified tour is going to be here with us too. So, expecting 40, 45 mods, 40, 45 super late models, and 25 to 30 midgets. So a full night of racing each night, full complete shows each night. So you'll see feature events, heat races, qualifying for all classes both nights.
Steve, I know you're a dirt track Hall of Famer. I know Diane told me, is it 35 years that you were racing?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I had a really, really long career as a driver in the World of Outlaws late model. I was actually the 07 champion of the World of Outlaws late model. And I retired in 17 and did a few other things, and in 2023 became the series director. So this is my second year as series director.
What makes the dirt track so cool? Admittedly, I haven't been over to the Farmer City Raceway. Definitely want to get over there. Probably should. But I've heard great things. A lot of people that have gone and checked it out, really passionate, a lot of racing fans around this area. What, in your opinion, as a guy that's driven it, a guy that's been involved with these events, what makes the dirt such a fun experience?
Well, there's quite a few things to that question. One is it's a quarter-mile bull ring, so it's side-by-side. I don't want to say full contact, but, you know, Rubbin's racing top of racing is what's going to go on here this weekend. Anytime you're on a quarter mile bull ring, you know, we run 12 second laps in the late models. So, you know, it's tight side by side racing, but also the drivers and are very accessible to the fans after the event. You know, everybody, fans can go to the pit area afterwards, meet the drivers, get t-shirts, talk to them, ask them about the races. So we're a very accessible group of people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. FarmerCityRacing.com is where you can check them out. The Atlanta 100 coming up tomorrow and Saturday, April 12th and 13th. Can you fill me in on so late model? What I know I'm sounding like a novice here, but how does that compare to maybe other cars out there as far as racing? What kind of style is this as far as that goes?
When we say it's a complete manufactured chassis from one of the you know reputable chassis builders in the dirt late model world.
Mm-hmm.
It has an aluminum body on it. You know, we have the Ford, the Chevrolet. There's even a few Dodges out there for those people. So it's really as far as engineering, and it's second to probably an Indy car or an F1 car as far as the engineering that's in under one of these race cars and the technology that's involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
There are anywhere from a 410 cubic inch motor to a 470 inch cubic engine making 900 horsepower on race gas. Weight rule's 2,350 pounds, so, you know, quite a bit of power-to-weight ratio.
Sure.
If you want to see that. They're sideways, you know, sliding on dirt, you know, 100 mile an hour going into the corner on a quarter-mile racetrack on dirt side-by-side.
Steve Francis joining us on the Tapman's Towing phone line, late model series director for the World of Outlaws. Looks like some nice cash prizes here. Friday, you got 40-lap feature for a $10,000 cash prize. You also got 60 laps on Saturday in the finale, $20,000 top prize. Does that have you thinking about getting back in the driver's seat at all, Steve?
With what these guys are making now, I mean, we had two or three racers last year that won over $1 million.
Wow.
In a dirt late model stock car. So, you know, that shows where the purses have got. I wish my career had been 5-7 years later, you know, financially probably been a lot better off. No, I enjoy what I was doing. I was very, very fortunate through my whole career. You know, the sport gave a lot to me, and taking over as series director, I'm hoping to be able to give a lot back to the sport.
You talked about kind of the side-by-side nature of this and the full contact racing, essentially. I imagine that there can be some pile-ups, some wreckage. Is that something that we might be expecting? And as a driver, how do you approach that?
Well, as a series director, I'm hoping not.
Yeah,
we're
right.
We're also smart enough to realize we're running on a quarter mile, you know, dirt track at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Side by side, sideways. So there's going to be some contact, you know. But these guys are all professionals. You know, a lot of times we'll run a 40 lap event and not even have a caution flag.
That's awesome. Next
race we might have five in five laps. So that's the unpredictable part about it. You know, pretty much everything about our sport is a little bit unpredictable when you go. There's, of the 40 cars here, 30 of them have stand a good chance of winning the event. It could win at any given racetrack on any given night. So, you know, it's hard to predict who the winner's actually going to be, and that's part of the big allure to the dirt late model world.
No doubt. Last one for you, Steve. Just what made you guys want to come through Farmer City? Because it is a track around here that's got a great reputation, and what kind of brought you guys here? And you guys have, obviously, a great deal of respect in the racing community.
Well, the Central Illinois area has a lot of really great quarter mile bull rings. You know, you have your Farmer City, you have your Fairbairies, you know, you head down towards St. Louis, you know, you've got the I-55 and racetracks like that, you know, Macon, Lincoln. So this area is just really, really rich with history. This event started about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. And this is the first year that it's been this late in the season. Usually we try to get this race in early March, mid-March, and we battle a lot of weather. So we moved it back a couple of weeks this year, and it looks like Mother Nature's finally going to cooperate with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking 63 tomorrow, no rain, and then sunny and 75 on Saturday. Can't complain about that at all. No. For more information, FarmerCityRacing.com, the Illini 100, World of Outlaws, Steve Francis, joining us, late model series director. Hey, Steve, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for filling us in on this. Best of luck this weekend. Hope for a great event, and it sounds like it definitely will be.
Thank you, guys. Hope everybody comes out, and hope you guys come out and see your first one this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Steve.
All right, thank you, guys.
Steve Francis on the Tapman's Towing phone line. Check them out this weekend, Farmer City Raceway. Once again, you can go to FarmerCityRacing.com, the Illini 100. Sounds like it'll be great action. One more time for you. Friday, 40-lap feature, $10,000 cash prize. Saturday, 60 laps in the finale, $20,000 cash prize. high speed, 100 miles an hour, quarter mile track, dirt racing. Kyle, you think we should maybe be late subs in this thing? You got any interest?
I don't know, man. That's a little daunting.
I would say so. I wouldn't want any part of that. I don't know. I need to get over there and see it, because Lon, and I wish Lon was here to talk about it. He's been over there. I know that a number of people, we got a lot of racing fans in the area that say it's just an awesome time, just high speeds. Like he said, though, too, afterwards, for me, I mean, my son might be a little too young still at 2 years old, but of course you can always put the little headphones on or whatever you call them, noise-canceling headphones. You know, the Drew Brees after the Super Bowl with his kid, that's the picture that always comes to my mind for those. But to get to talk to the drivers and get autographs and pictures and all that kind of stuff, it's really a great event. So we hope that you go check them out, give them the love that they deserve, and we appreciate the time catching up with Steve. Let's catch a break here, Kyle, and then we'll circle back. We'll talk some Illini transfer portal. Any thoughts on Kylan Boswell? There's a crystal ball that got put in today. I wonder who did that. I don't know. Maybe Kyle can fill me in. He's good at that research. But and we could talk some more Kentucky. We could talk some more Brad Underwood. I wanted to look at his contract and where he stands and as far as coaches' salaries out there. I do think that Josh Whitman's done a good job of making it difficult for someone to poach him away. And there's been some talk of maybe after an Elite Eight, they would up that ante a little bit more in terms of a buyout, in terms of a raise. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is The Drive.
In an ever-changing real estate market, it is so important to work with experienced agents like Russ and Nick Taylor. With the Taylor teams at Taylor Realty Associates, they have the knowledge and expertise to get your home sold for the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time. Trust the experience and success of Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor team at Taylor Realty Associates. Give them a call today at 217-355-0700 or visit them online at taylorboys.com. That's taylorboys.com.
And now, Kelsey Briggs, owner of Salon 105 in Mahomet.
We have a luxury destination salon located out here in central Illinois, and we have stylists here for everybody and any need. We have a very wide range of stylists that can cover any needs. There is somebody that can provide any services from a perm to a balayage to extensions and everything in between. Every stylist that works here is certified in Bello Haven hand-tied extensions, and we do a lot of education. We bring in high-level educators from all over the world and invite local salons to come out here and learn. So not only do we welcome clients here, but we also welcome other stylists or salons in the area to come and learn.
To book your appointment at one of the premier salons in central Illinois, go to salon-105.com. That's salon-105.com.
Hey, where are you headed?
To Kelsey Furniture in Tuscola.
What do they have there?
What don't they have there? Living room furniture, benches, chests, love seats, sectionals, tables, bedroom sets, hutches, nightstands, end tables, cabinets, mirrors, stools, clocks, lamps, pillows, rugs, desks, media consoles, patio furniture, Tempur-Pedic mattresses, and more.
So, everything.
Yeah, probably could have just said that.
Kelsey Furniture, quality for less.
Back on The Drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Kylan Boswell coming to town starting tomorrow. The Champaign native entered the transfer portal on Tuesday. This is a big one, Kyle. We discussed it yesterday. Probably can't discuss it enough based on the interest. Hey, Illinois might have a point guard next year. Yes, they did have a top five offense last year without one. But it seems like
they honestly haven't had a true point guard that they can trust since Io, because you had Trent kind of play it.
Yeah.
And you had the freshmen that were really up and down.
Yep.
And you know, Jaden Epps was not, I wouldn't consider him a true point guard. He's more of a scoring guard.
Yep.
And Andre Curbelo, obviously, his sophomore year was bumpy, to say the least.
I would say, yeah.
So it's been a while. It's probably been since Iota Sunmu that you know that you have a point guard that you can just give the ball to. He's going to play every game and you can rely on.
That's a good point. That year in 21, you had two of them with Io and a freshman year Curbelo, which was someone that was far more steady. And really that second half of the season was such a big asset off the bench. Pick and roll guy, just didn't make as many mistakes. The turnover rate went down, didn't have those wild passes, still was able to make it look fancy. But that Big Ten tournament version of Curbelo and whatnot was a high-level player. And I thought Trent did a decent job
of
adjusting to that role. I thought that as time went on, he came in similar to like a Jaden Epps as a wired to score guard, had the size of a point guard, but more so of a two guard or a combo guard who could handle but was really getting his own shot versus making other guys better. I think Kylan still can grow in the pick and roll, and his assist numbers are decent. I mean, he had in his two seasons, I was digging this up from my article today, 2.1-1 assist to turnover ratio. That's pretty good. Pick and roll numbers, if you look at the analytics, not like fantastic as far as his scoring out of the pick and roll. He does need to get better at finishing at the rim. This past year, 52%, below average in college basketball. His first year was better at that, but this was really the first season of the two at Arizona. They really handed him the ball to play point. Like his freshman year, which was really supposed to be his senior year in high school when he reclassed, he was more of a spot up option. A guy that has shot just tremendously on catch and shoots, 41% catch and shoot opportunities, 38% overall from three, good range. I think he can, even if he's Illinois' point guard, I think that I really like the fact that you can play him off the ball some. And I think that helps your sell with A.J. Storr. If you're talking to A.J. about running stuff through him a la Terrence Shannon, getting him downhill, having that lane open to space it out, and what Kylan can be as a kickout shooter, and what I know that some of these other options, like a Dante Maddox, if you bring him in, and Kerry Booth, if you get him as a stretch four, those type of things, obviously from a basketball fit standpoint, only add to Illinois' sell. Yes, you need the NIL, which I don't worry about. Yes, you need the relationships and all those type of things. But on the note of Dante Maddox, he's a guy that played point guard at Toledo this past year. And I've wondered about this with Louisville getting the first visit. You always wonder about that with someone getting that first crack at him. Would they, because they're similar to Illinois, they're going to try to close Kylan this weekend. They're going to try to close Dante Maddox when he comes early next week. Louisville's going into this weekend saying, we're going to try to close Dante Maddox. I wonder if they're trying to tell him that, hey, you can be our point guard, similar to what he was at Toledo. I don't know that, but if I'm Illinois, I'm saying, look at the way Kylan can be a spot-up shooter. He doesn't have to have the ball in his hands all the time. Maddox can push in transition. Kylan can push in transition. If Maddox is making a play off the dribble, Kylan's very dangerous as a spot-up shooter. Same thing with Maddox. Maddox is a great catch-and-shoot, off-movement, off-screens, just really a lights-out shooter with deep range too as well. I think they work well together, even though they are fairly – they don't have a lot of height. But Kylan is – he's thick, man. He could probably afford to lean up a little bit. I think that Illinois would like him to do that, to be a little bit more explosive, a little more burst off the dribble, a little bit more bouncy, if that's possible, around the basket. But what do you think about those two potentially playing together and just the – as we get closer to this Kylan visit, your feeling on that?
Yeah, that's kind of the dream backcourt right now. And I think the biggest thing with those two guys is you need a high-level shooting backcourt to pair with some of these other guys, because your front court, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And obviously, Kerry Booth's a guy that you project can be a really good shooter and a stretch big. And that if you were to get him, I'm not saying he's, you know, his 29% as a freshman is who he is as a shooter. I think it's clear he can grow. But, you know, you've got Imani Hansberry, Merez Johnson. You've got Ty Rogers, a non-shooter. Trey White's a guy who hasn't shot it efficiently. Even if you were to add A.J. Storr to that mix, a guy who only shot 32%, more of a volume scoring type, like you're going to need shooting outside of just Luke Goody and Jake Davis off your bench. You need to replace the shooting that you're losing this year to avoid reverting back to 2 years ago and being the 330-something three-point shooting team, which was a disaster, right? So I think the fact that both these guys can shoot it from the outside is important. But I do agree with you that I think that both of them can play off each other, and you can put the ball in both their hands and feel comfortable. It's not necessarily that you have to say, all right, Kylan Boswell's our point guard. He's bringing it up every time down. He's going to be involved in every action. He's not that type of player. Like, I think, and that's not really how Arizona used him either.
Sure.
So I think to have two different guards that can play off each other, that can create a little bit, that can kind of play your quote-unquote point guard at times, I think that could work well. And with Maddox, like, recruiting-wise, my one counter to the Louisville thing would be, like, this is a fifth-year guy who's playing his last year of college basketball. Yeah, maybe Louisville can say, you'll touch the ball slightly more here and play our point guard. But doesn't he want to win? Like, if you're him, don't you want to win? Louisville's not making the tournament.
Yeah.
Louisville is not making the tournament in the first year of Pat Kelsey. So I think your sell is still pretty strong. And it's not like you're bringing in a all-conference star point guard. Boswell's a good player. I think he can get there as a senior, but it's not a guy that you have to completely tell every other guard you're recruiting, like, no, this is going to be our guy, and if you come here, you're playing strictly off the ball, and Kylan Boswell's the guy that you have to play next to. Like, yeah. I think those guys can coexist, and I think, man, Maddox's shooting would be huge for this roster.
Big time. Yeah, and he's a guy that has length to him with his wingspan, has some strength to
him.
They
both play bigger than 6'2". Like, Boswell is stronger, and he's got a bigger frame and can hold up physically against bigger guards, and Maddox is longer. And I think, has he graded out well defensively? I don't really know.
I think he at least has
the tools to create some problems there and not get totally picked apart for his size.
Yeah. I know that Boswell, his analytics on Synergy, really, really good. 81st percentile on defense this past year. Was top 10 in the Pac-12 in steals. So he's a guy that can get into you. I think he's active off the ball. I know that I've heard the people that watch Arizona a little more closely that he gambles a little bit too much at times. But again, it's an 18 going on 19-year-old, turns 19 next week. Still probably has a lot to learn. And I would be thrilled if I was Illinois to balance the experience with still some of the untapped potential. Before we get out of here, I know we're at the bottom of this hour. Nick says, if Kylan's running the point, what does that mean for Ty Rogers?
He goes back to his natural position and doesn't have to play a position that is not what he should be playing like he did last year.
That's the fair answer. I do admittedly say Ty should be a 3/4, but there's some traffic there, especially if Illinois gets Kerry Booth. If Amani's playing more 4 this year.
Yep.
If they go get a 5, which it sounds like they're very interested in, Merez is playing the 5. Trey White's going to play the 3 or the 4. I think he plays maybe more 4 if they get AJ Storr. So there are some fair questions about that. Ty can help some of the conversation by getting a workable jump shot, because everything else, although I would say his defense does need to improve, but maybe it will guarding some more people that are more like him instead of
absolutely
chasing guards, right?
Yes. I think he is a really talented defender that was playing out of position last year and guarding guys he shouldn't have been guarding. I think if he's plays the wing, if he plays the 3-4, guards guys his size, I think he'll be just fine on that end. I want to ask you a little bit about Merez Johnson next hour and how he fits into all this, because I know Illinois has been active in the front court market, and I want to get your thoughts on how Illinois views Merez Johnson next year, because I think that's the guy that's kind of people haven't thought as much about. This is a really, really good prospect.
He definitely is. We'll get to that. We'll get to your text, 217-359-2255 on the U of I Line of League text line. We got to catch a break. This is The Drive.